You know, the hits up here are just a little bit different, and you're over a longer period of time. So being able to withstand hits, you know, and if need be, deliver some hits if I have to go score, whatever it may be. So I just think, you know, I kept my speed and just added a little bit, you know, of weight.
That's Kenny Pickett at Steelers OTAs talking about putting some weight on. He's done that to the tune of beefing up to 226 from 213 at the end of last season. Seeing as how he had two concussions last year and wants to absorb contact a little easier, dish it out more often. If that's what Pickett wants to do, so be it. As long as his agility isn't compromised, I'm all in favor of it because I thought last year Pickett's mobility was one of his best assets. I am Tim Benz. This is the Pittsburgh CityCast. We'll get to some Steelers conversation in just a little bit. But first off, let's look at some of the lines out there right now in hockey. As we're brought to you by Bet Rivers, download the app today or go online to BetRivers.com. Bet now from anywhere. Coming to you on a Wednesday today, juggling some things around with a short work week, adjusting with Mark Madden's schedule and our podcast schedule, our show schedule on 105.9 The X. So thanks for bearing with us. Of course, that does come now in the middle of a Pirates game, so can't do much with the Pirates and their odds. Let's look at hockey instead. The NHL, the conference finals going on. Such as they are with both teams that are trailing on the brink of elimination now. Florida, a minus 114 favorite to close out the Eastern Conference Finals tonight against the Carolina Hurricanes. I do like that. I picked the Panthers to win that series. I certainly didn't see it coming in a sweep, though. I thought it'd be a seven-gamer because I felt each game would be close and evenly matched, and eventually some breaks would go the Hurricanes' way. The first thing was true. The second thing, most assuredly, has not been. A 3-2 quad overtime win for the Panthers. Then a 2-1 overtime win and a 1-0 win. And I don't think Carolina is done, even though they're down 3-0. When people say Team X is done in a playoff series, that connotes that they can't win. That you think they're spent. They have emotionally quit. They've given up. They're physically overwhelmed and tactically outcoached. I don't think Carolina is any of that. I don't think they're done. I just think they're demoralized. I feel like their will has cracked after that last game, having played three nail-biters like that in a row and just not getting a single thing to go their way. So give me the Panthers at minus 114 and give me the under at minus 112. Neither price, in my estimation, is too high to stick with the trends. As far as the Stars and Vegas Golden Knights in the West, Jamie Benn, as of this taping, has yet to be suspended. I hope he is. I hope it's for the rest of the series. After that display in Game 3, cross-checking Mark Stone in the face, that result is worthy of that hit. With or without Benn, though, Vegas is getting plus 108 to close out Dallas tomorrow. Really? Plus money in that situation? I'll take Vegas for sure. I get it. The Stars are playing for pride at home, but likely without Benn for at least this game and down 3-0, why make another trip, right? I know it's to Vegas, but why make another trip? Especially with the way things are stacked against them. Just crawl into the woods and let the series die. Seriously, and if Florida closes out Carolina tonight, the Knights should definitely want to close out Dallas tomorrow so they can have an equal amount of rest going into the Stanley Cup final. And oh, what a final it will be. Florida versus Vegas. Good old Original Six hockey, huh? Just like God intended. That series may be watched by literally dozens and dozens of people. But, you know, on that topic, Pierre Maguire was on the Mark Madden Show on 105.9 The X. And he talked a lot about the upsets in the hockey playoffs this year and teams like Florida getting hot and eliminating some teams with better records. And this is what he said about why that is happening and why analytics is backfiring, perhaps, and why that might dovetail with the results.
Yeah, and the teams that went heavy on smaller skilled players, they can't have an overabundance of them. And if they do, they're not playing right now. And that's a bit of a problem for them. So, one, and I'm not trying to pick on the analytics community at all, but a lot of these teams built their team through analytic equation. And the problem is most of the top analytic players are not overly large people. And so that becomes a big issue. And, you know, I really started to follow this trend, Mark, back in 2011 when analytics really started to become more of the common discussion in the NHL. And I remember watching the Bruins. They did their game 7 in Vancouver. And the top players for them in that Game 7 were Sean Thornton, Gregory Campbell, and Danny Pae. Those were the three worst analytic players on the Boston Bruins the entire season. But they, in that Game 7 in Vancouver, and I did the game with Doc Emmerich and Eddie Olchuk, and I'll tell you right now, it wasn't even close. If Boston doesn't have those three players, they're not winning that Game 7. That's how much of a difference those guys make.
That was interesting stuff from Pierre. So I was on for Mark yesterday, and Pierre comes on every week. I heard that from McGuire last week, so I asked him to expand on that when he joined me on Mark's show on Tuesday, and we talked about a number of other things, including the Penguins GM search as well. But this is what Pierre said as sort of a follow-up to his point about analytics and maybe the good analytic teams not so much being built for the postseason, even though they are built for the regular season. Why do you think the change is that dramatic, and how do teams that are analytics built that sort of heavy in that direction, how do they get around it? What's the smartest way?
To identify the importance of character and the importance of character in terms of depth players. In the playoffs in the Stanley Cup, $1 million player can basically eliminate a $10 million player. How does a player get to be a $10 million player? Usually, not always, but usually their analytics are through the roof. They're tremendous point getters. They manage the puck. They possess the puck. They make the players around them better. But in the playoffs, where the rules change a little bit, not a lot, but a little bit, Tim, as you know, and physicality becomes more of an everyday process throughout a seven-game series, it can break down those analytic numbers pretty well, pretty significantly. So the best teams right now are basically built on a combination of things. And what we've seen over the last probably year to maybe make it 3 years, Tampa was the first one to realize after they won the President's Trophy and they got eliminated by Columbus in the first round back in 2019. I think that's when they realized this isn't working. So the next year they went out and they go out and get Blake Coleman. They go out and get Barkley Goodrow. They bring in Patrick Maroon, fresh off a cup win in St. Louis. They bring in, you know, Luke Shen. They bring in Bogosian. They bring in bigger, meaner, nastier pieces, and all of a sudden, they go to the final 3 straight years. So I think teams started to see what Tampa did, and they realized you probably need to have a combo if you're going to be successful.
You touched on what I think is a core part of the discussion there, Pierre, when you said $1 million player can effectively eliminate a $10 million player when you get to the postseason. Is that a problem? I mean, like, should the NHL be concerned about that?
No, I don't think so. It's part of the trial and tribulation of winning. There's some $10 million players that never get eliminated. Now, Mario didn't make $10 million over the course of a season when he was playing, but he would have been the equivalent of a $10 million player today. And I can tell you, having been part of the organization when he was there, there was nobody shutting him down. And trust me, everybody tried. The only time it was really relevant was in 92 when Adam Graves slashed him across the hand in the second round against the Rangers and broke his hand. That was the only way you could stop him. And believe me, people tried. But Mario and other players, you know, on our team, Kevin Stevens, Mark Recchi, later on Rick Tocchet, Ronnie Francis, Jaromir Jagr. I mean, people drew up. And that was a nasty NHL with the two-line pass in play. Now there's no two-line pass, so it's easier even for star players to get going. But I think really true star players find a way. They really find a way. And sometimes analytics doesn't always tell you who those true players are. They just tell you who the great point getters are, but they don't always tell you who the true players are.
Pierre, you sort of used 2019 there as a bit of a watermark for this discussion. The Penguins last won a playoff series in 2018. Have they sort of fallen victim to this whole discussion, do you think?
I don't know if that's fair for me to comment on that. I mean, they've had some different things go on there. They lost some management people. You know, people were going in different directions. Jason Botterill and Randy Sexton went up to Buffalo. They lost some of their scouting staff who went to different parts of the world. They lost some people of Vancouver. So ideology was kind of in flux. And I think that's probably the most fair way to put it, Tim. And so as somebody that really cares and watches the Penguins a lot, I would say that it'd be unfair to say it that way about them. I just think they've been an organization that's been a little bit in flux. And they've also dealt with some injury situations. But the truth is that they're still a very competent team. They're just going to have to be super creative going forward with whomever the new management people are.
Pierre McGuire with us. Okay, Pierre, let's go to that next. Who do you think walks away with the GM job?
No clue. I wish I could tell you, Tim. I really do. I would tell you if I knew. I just don't have any idea. I know what the people are speculating, and I know there are tons of rumors coming out of Toronto, and there's some rumors coming out of Boston, and there's some rumors coming out of different parts of North America, but I don't know. And if I knew, I would tell you. I just don't know.
I know that there's been a lot of attention being paid here in Pittsburgh to Kyle Dubas. He is a guy who has had a reputation largely built on his ability to use analytics to build a team. Did that catch up to him at all, to the previous discussion, Pierre, and where the Maple Leafs got knocked out?
Well, I think Kyle adjusted a little bit. I think he realized early on that he was utilizing analytics to a very high level, and it wasn't paying off. And, you know, I believe he had six playoff series over his tenure as a general manager there, and they won one, and that was this year against Tampa. And Tampa, obviously, I thought in that series Tampa could have beat them. But to his credit, he recognized the need to bring in players that had more bite, more character, more abrasion, guys that would do whatever it took to win a game. You look at Luke Shen and what he did. Jake McCabe, bringing him in from Chicago. You know, Morgan Riley had his best year, by the way, and I really think part of it was he had bigger players around him to take away from some of the physical beating he would take night in and night out as a targeted defenseman in the league. So I think Kyle actually improved as he was going along in Toronto. I don't know what happened between he and Brendan. I know what the papers speculate, but there usually is more behind the scenes than just what the papers speculate when it comes to that stuff. So I don't know, but I would tell you this. Kyle Dubas is an honorable person. I think he's an astute hockey evaluator. I do know that he's very heavy in analytics, but I also think he's realized that you just can't do it one way. I think you need to have a balance.
If he needs a break, I don't think this is the right job to take right now, Pierre, because it is a big job. There's a lot to fix when it comes to the Penguins. And he was speaking in his postseason press conference about the toll that was put on his family and it's going to be Toronto or nowhere. I mean, I don't know how much of that was just to feel like he was saying the right thing before a decision was made or whatever. But for me, if I'm looking at this situation, I'm Dubas and it's 50-50, I say sit out a year and poke your head back up again next season.
Sometimes, and I learned this from the great Craig Patrick and the late Badger Bob Johnson and Scotty Bowman, sometimes it's better just to chill out before you meet with the press because there's so much emotion involved. And if you go back to 90, 91, 92, when Craig was really on top of things as a general manager, he was an amazing leader. Stuff like that didn't happen around Pittsburgh. There was not a lot of emotional discourse. Everything was really controlled and well presented, and it was Craig, Bob, and Scotty that did that. I don't know if Kyle had the same resources around him. Mm-hmm. And in that market in particular, that's tough at the end of a very emotional season. So I wouldn't hold him too much to what he said on that. I just wouldn't, just trying to be fair. Tim, I think he's a very honorable person. I do think he does care about his family significantly, and that's a tough market to work in when you're not winning. They haven't been winning. Let's totally call it the way it is. They win in the regular season. They don't win in the playoffs, and that's a problem.
I know that Eric Tulsky sort of has a reputation of being a heavy analytics guy, too, the assistant GM in Carolina. Another name that's been brought up frequently as a potential candidate here in Pittsburgh is Steve Grilly. What can you tell us about him?
He was a walk-on at Boston University. He played prep school hockey at Thayer Academy in Boston. He worked with the Buffalo Sabres. Good friends with Chris Drury, who's the general manager of the New York Rangers. Spent a lot of time in Buffalo on the road in the New England area in particular. Now he's working with the Dallas Stars for a really good person in Jimmy Neal. Really, really fantastic guy, the general manager of the Dallas Stars, Jimmy Neal. So Steve's got some experience now. He's not wet behind the ears at all. I think there's a relationship there with Mike Sullivan because of the Boston University connection. Obviously, the people that own Fenway Sports would know Steve, I would imagine, pretty well. So he's somebody that is cutting his teeth at the managerial level at pro hockey in the NHL.
There's an article that came out from inside the AHL.com outlet that covers the minors about the Penguins and a mandate, an action statement, if nothing else, Pierre, about the desire that they've got to beef up things in Wilkes-Barre. And I hope that's the case. Apparently, this is coming from Mike Sullivan, even in advance of a GM being hired. I hope they do that. And I hope when it comes to pass that they have a little bit more faith in the guys they do promote and use those guys as they did when Sullivan first took over as coach, when they leaned on a lot of AHL guys in really high pressure situations in 16 and 17. I think that's something that has to be woven back into the equation for the Penguins next year.
Tim, that's really well said, and I couldn't agree with you more. I really couldn't. The lifeblood of any organization starts with your scouting staff, and usually your scouting staff, those are the people that are filling your minor league positions. They're the ones going out and getting the players. They're the real boots on the ground. I can tell you, when I was in Ottawa two seasons ago, our farm team hadn't made the playoffs in 4 years. It was a really critical time in terms of the development of our young players in Ottawa. I spent a significant amount of time with our coaches and our players down in Belleville, and they made the playoffs for the first time in 4 years. I was really proud of that. I was really proud of the players and what they did and the coaches for what they did there. And it made a difference. A lot of those guys have been, you know, part of the Ottawa Senators group now, which is one of the better young organizations in hockey. So I'm really, really proud of those guys and what they've been able to do. I think it's the lifeblood. If you look at the Montreal Canadiens, especially in the 50s and the 60s and the 70s, when they were winning cups, it seemed like five or six every decade. Part of their growth was the amount of resources. They were really one of the first teams to do research and development at the minor league level. And it really paid off, especially in the 1970s. If you look at guys like Bob Gainey and Doug Jarvis and Larry Robinson and Steve Shutt, Guy Lafleur never had to go down there and do his chores with the Nova Scotia Voyageurs. But most of the players that came up to Montreal along the way in the 70s, they all did time in the minors, and they all learned what it was to be an NHL player and what it was to do the things the proper way, the Montreal Canadiens way. And I think you can still do that, especially in the cap world today. If you don't have a good minor league system, Tim, I think it's really hard to win with consistency.
Pierre McGuire with us for another moment or two. Longtime NHL executive and television personality, talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs and many other things in the hockey world. And let's get to the two conference finals here, Pierre, because, well, we've already seen one sweep in the NBA. We're not going to see dueling sweeps in the NHL for the conference finals, are we?
I don't think so. I think everybody's kind of surprised at where the Florida-Carolina series has gone. They've all been so darn tight, obviously, and I feel terrible for Rod Brind'Amour and what he's done. I mean, they're missing two really important players in Max Pacioretty and Andrei Svechnikov. If they had those, maybe these one-goal games and these four overtime period losses wouldn't be happening. But they don't have them. It's been an amazingly tight series. I think it's going to be very hard for Carolina to get off the mat tomorrow night in Game 4. This is go time for Dallas. They were really, really the better team on Sunday afternoon in Vegas, Tim. They couldn't find a way to extend the lead, and eventually they lose on a Chandler Stephenson overtime goal. But and if it's not good enough, then they'll probably get swept. But I don't think we'll see two sweeps in hockey. I just don't believe that'll happen.
Finally, Pierre, you're surprised that Logan Cooley is going to stay at Minnesota for another year?
I am. I think part of that might be because of what's going on in Arizona right now. The franchise is a bit in flux. That being said, Logan is a spectacular player. I know he's got huge Pittsburgh roots. He was tremendous this entire season. At the University of Minnesota. He had an unbelievable World Junior for Team USA. His relationship with Matthew Nye is on the ice, and Nye is going to be a star player in the NHL who's playing in Toronto right now, or was until they got knocked out, was off the charts. Two of the most dynamic players in college hockey this past year. And I'm a little surprised by that, but listen, Logan is a can't-miss player. There's a lot of Pat LaFontaine in there. There's a lot of Jack Hughes in there. I think he's going to be a very, very special player in the National Hockey League. Arizona did well to draft him.
He's getting that NIL. He's getting that Chipotle money. That's a lot of burritos he must be getting to stick around in college.
You know what? It's interesting. I've got two children that are college athletes. One's a rower at Dartmouth, and my daughter and my son's a hockey player at Colgate, and so this NIL has really been a different. It's been a different thing to have to deal with, for sure. Definitely different.
Pierre, thanks so much. Great stuff. Really appreciate it.
Oh, Tim, it's really nice chatting with you again. Take care. Enjoy the rest of your summer.
Okay, so my thanks to Pierre. By the way, Vegas is at minus 118 to win the Cup. The Panthers are at plus 125 right now. I love the Panthers if they're getting plus money with the way they're peaking. They feel to me like, you know, in 05 when the Steelers won the Super Bowl, they came in as the last seed in the playoffs. They got hot at the right time. They peaked late. They started to get good at the end of the regular season. They rolled through the playoffs. The year before was supposed to be their year, just like last year was supposed to be the Panthers' year, and then they weren't so good in the postseason. And now I feel like it's come together for Florida in a similar way as it did for the Steelers that year. That's the analogy I'm drawing. So give me the Panthers right now at plus money. I'll keep betting against Vegas, and eventually maybe I'll be right. I've been against them all year, and they've made me look stupid all year. So sorry, Florida, but I'm on your side. As for Carolina and Vegas, if you're hoping for a monster payout and a big payday on a 3-0 comeback, a huge tilt in either series, the Canes are plus 1,000 to come back and win that series from three down, and the Stars are plus 1,400. Okay, on to football. Steelers OTAs, Mason Rudolph, Mitch Trubisky, both back to back up Kenny Pickett at quarterback. And since we've spent most of 1 week of our lives arguing about backup quarterbacks here in Pittsburgh, let's do a little comparative analysis, shall we? We could probably extend this experiment throughout the NFL and reach a similar conclusion, but for the sake of avoiding granular discussion like third QB comps for every team and making it even more mind-numbing, let's limit our scope to looking at the four reigning division champs in the AFC, all right? In Kansas City, Patrick Mahomes is backed up by Blaine Gabbert and Shane Buechele. In Cincinnati, Joe Burrow is backed up by Trevor Siemian and Jake Browning. The reserves behind Josh Allen in Buffalo are Kyle Allen and Matt Barkley. Trevor Lawrence's in Jacksonville are C.J. Beathard and Nathan Rourke. I offer those names as points of comparison for any Steelers fans who are griping about the Steelers retaining both Mitch Trubisky and Mason Rudolph behind Pickett this year. For those who say that either or both of those quarterbacks aren't good enough to be where they are on the depth chart and shouldn't have been bothered to be kept, which of those second stringers that I just listed on other teams and other cities, which of those second stringers is significantly better than Trubisky, and which third stringer are you sure is better than Rudolph? Because I don't have one in either case. And I'm not someone who thinks Trubisky or Rudolph are all that great, but I'd probably take Trubisky over all those second stringers and Rudolph over all the third string guys. And remember, these are all defending division champions we're talking about. These are all teams that should have AFC championship game aspirations, if not the Super Bowl. Yet these are the quarterbacks those franchises are willing to ride with if their star starters should go down at any point this season. Would you feel better as a Steeler fan if Pickett went down for an extended stretch and he had to turn to any one of those guys before Trubisky as the number two and Rudolph as the number three? I wouldn't. Now, in terms of those who are complaining about whatever these two end up making against the salary cap, I can see the premise of that concern a little bit more easily. Beathard makes the most of those number two quarterbacks that I listed at about $2 million on the cap. The rest are in the neighborhood of $1 million. Meanwhile, that's roughly where Rudolph will probably be as the third guy in Pittsburgh. Even after Trubisky's extension, which was primarily given to spread out his cap hit this year, he'll still likely be the most expensive quarterback of that bunch, so I get it. But keep in mind, Trubisky signed as the perceived starter before Pickett was even drafted. So that's why his contract was $10 million against the cap for 2023 in the first place. None of those other quarterbacks were brought into those cities under such a circumstance. As for Rudolph, the only one of those third quarterbacks who's older than him and was drafted close to his high is Barkley, who's making $1 million against the cap, and that number probably will end up being the same neighborhood as Rudolph's. His cap hit is still unknown, yet no one seemed to be complaining about Trubisky being a $10 million hit 2 months ago when free agency opened. All I heard was how great it was
that the Steelers were being so aggressive in free agency, which, let's admit it, was only mildly true and nowhere near as hyped as Steeler Twitter made it out to be. The Steelers bought in bulk on the free agent market. They weren't high-end shopping. Could they have been if they had just kept Rudolph for slightly more at the start of free agency and traded or released Trubisky to save $8 million on the cap back then? Yeah, maybe, but I doubt it. I mean, would they have won the Javon Hargrave sweepstakes if they did that? Unlikely. Would they have outbid Detroit to keep Cameron Sutton? Eh, probably not. You know, knowing that they could still get Patrick Peterson for what they did. It's not like the first wave of inside linebackers who went off the market before Omar Khan signed Landon Roberts and Cole Holcomb were all that expensive. I mean, with the exception of Tremaine Edmonds, all the guys at that position went way under market projections, yet the Steelers went bargain shopping at that position anyway. So I think the hindsight evaluation of what could have been done with Trubisky's contract if the Steelers had decided to keep Rudolph as the number two in the first place is a bit pie-in-the-sky thinking. I'm pretty sure Khan and Coach Tomlin were of the belief Rudolph would find a home as a number two somewhere else as well, like most people were thinking, and would have seen keeping him as a number three as a luxury they couldn't afford back in March. But now they can, because whatever money they save on a Trubisky restructure, what are they really going to do at this point on the free agent market? What are they going to get? A veteran pass rusher like Marcus Golden? Okay, sure, hopefully. But they would have been able to get a guy like that in July or August, whether they had both backup QBs in the roster or not. They still might. Having a starting quarterback on the second year of an entry-level contract affords for this kind of flexibility. Those worried about Trubisky not being worth the extra 2 years on his contract and the $33 million price tag floated all over Twitter, you need not fret, okay? I'm sure they can figure out a way around Trubisky's cap number in 24 and 25, just like they did here in 23. And based on the bonuses that Ian Rappaport alluded to in breaking the news of his contract, that means Trubisky is not going to make the full amount unless he's playing a lot and playing well, because he's either relieved or replaced Pickett due to ineffectiveness or injury. And at that point, the strategy of keeping him would have proven worthwhile. So it's kind of like a self-fulfilling prophecy. There are three kinds of people, basically, in the world that you never want to pay until you need them. And then they're the best ones you could possibly have in your phone. Lawyers, insurance agents, and backup quarterbacks. Having two good ones on retainer, if you could afford them, that's not a bad idea when it comes to the quarterback position behind your starter. All right, that'll do it for the Pittsburgh CityCast for this week. Tim Benz with you as always. We will be back again next week. It's going to be, again, kind of a floating week with the holiday on Monday. We've got to figure out some things in terms of the schedule. Hoping to be back with you on Tuesday. If not, might have to bump it to Wednesday based on how things look for the schedule for next week. A little bit of a make-it-up-as-we-go-along situation because of Memorial Day. But we look forward to talking to you again. And in the meanwhile, if you haven't yet, download the Bet Rivers app today or go online to BetRivers.com. Bet now from anywhere.
Thanks for listening to the Pittsburgh CityCast on the Bet Rivers Network.